Blog Talk Radio.
Baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy no more, but you'll always be my baby. It seems like only yesterday I was holding you in my arms. Now look at you now, big man. But I worry about you. I worry about you all the time. Hanging out on the corner all times of night with the cool people. Baby, that ain't nothing but trouble. I always taught you that you could have whatever you dream. Well, I want you to hold on to that dream, baby. Hold on to it real tight. Cause the sky's the limit.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight? I'd like to welcome to the stage the lyrically acclaimed. I like this young man because when he came out with the phrase, he went from ashy to classy. I like that. So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for the Notorious B.I.G. The Notorious B.I.G., ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. A nigga never been as broke as me. I like that. When I was young, I had two pair of leaves. Besides that, the pinstripes and the gray. The one I wore on Mondays and Wednesdays. While niggas flirt, I'm throwing tigers on my shirt and alligators. You wanna see the inside? I see you later. Here come the drama. Oh, that's that nigga with the fake. Wow, why you punch me in my face? Stay in your place, play your position. Here come my intuition. Go in this nigga pocket, rob him while his friends watching and hoes clocking. Here comes respect. This crew's your crew, or they might be next. Look at they man eyes, big man, they never try. So we roll with them, stole with them, I mean loyalty. Niggas bought me milks at lunch, the milks with chocolate, the cookies, butter crunch. 88, eyes tossed and blue and white stuff, that's blunt.
Why is it that you keep on, just keep on trying?
Keep on trying on. Sky is the limit. Baby, we'll be your man.
baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy no more, but you'll always be my baby. It seems like only yesterday I was holding you in my arms. Now look at you now, big man. But I worry about you. I worry about you all the time. Hanging out on the corner all times of night with the cool people. Baby, that ain't nothing but trouble. I always taught you that you could have whatever you dream. Well, I want you to hold on to that dream, baby. Hold on to it real tight. Because the sky's the limit.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right.
I'd like to welcome to the stage the lyrically acclaimed.
Woo.
I like this young man because when he came out with the phrase, he went from ashy to classy.
All right.
I like that.
All right.
So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for the Notorious B.I.G. The Notorious B.I.G., ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. A nigga never been as broke as me. I like that. When I was young, I had some fair leads. Besides that, the pinstripes and the gray. The one I wore on Mondays and Wednesdays. While niggas flirt, I'm throwing tigers on my shirt and alligators. You wanna see the inside? I see you later. Here come the drama. Oh, that's that nigga with the fake.
Wow.
Why you punch me in my face? Stay in your place. Play your position. Here come my intuition. Go in this nigga pocket. Rob him while his friends watching. That whole clock. Here comes respect. This crew's your crew, or they might be next. Look at their man's eyes, big man, they never try. So we roll with them, stole with them, I mean loyalty. Niggas bought me milks at lunch, the milks with chocolate, the cookies, butter crunch. 88, Oshkosh, and blue and white stuff, that's blunt.
Just keep on
baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy no more, but you'll always be my baby. It seems like only yesterday I was holding you in my arms. Now look at you now, big man. But I worry about you. I worry about you all the time. Hanging out on the corner all times of night with the cool people. Baby, that ain't nothing but trouble. I always taught you that you could have whatever you dream. Well, I want you to hold on to that dream, baby. Hold on to it real tight. Cause the sky's the limit.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right.
I'd like to welcome to the stage the lyrically acclaimed.
Woo.
I like this young man because when he came out with the phrase, he went from ashy to classy.
All right.
I like that.
All right.
So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for the Notorious B.I.G. The Notorious B.I.G., ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. A nigga never been as broke as me. I like that. When I was young, I had to pay a lease. Besides that, the pinstripes in the gray. The one I wore on Mondays and Wednesdays. While niggas flirt, I'm throwing tigers on my shirt and alligators. You wanna see the inside? I see you later. Here come the drama. Oh, that's that nigga with the fake.
Wow.
Why you punch me in my face? Stay in your place. Play your position. Here come my intuition. Go in this nigga pocket. Rob him while his friends watching. That hoes clocking. Here comes respect. This crew's your crew, or they might be next. Look at they man's eyes, big man, they never try. So we roll with them, stole with them. I mean loyalty, niggas bought me milks at lunch. The milks with chocolate, the cookies, butter crunch. 88, Oshkosh and blue and white stuff, that's blunt.
Just keep on
welfare. Third ship him, don't let him deal with brothers.
step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes, learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played with kids and then change. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same.
Baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy no more, but you'll always be my baby.
Face. Good morning, High Frequency Radio. This is your new host, Brother Sharif. We're here today on Tuesday, November 26, 2013. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate the opportunity that's given to me, our brother Youssef. And the High Frequency Radio Network has invited me to come upon the show and extend and continue to share the information regarding debt, debt collectors, and things of that nature. I promised our brother Youssef that I would keep the frequency high and keep the heat upon the debt collectors. And we intend to do that here today and on every Tuesday here at High Frequency Radio at 11 a.m. East Coast Standard Time. And we will be here to hopefully answer your questions in efforts to remove these economic restraints that society has deemed debt. I hope everyone can hear me out there. Please let me know if you can't. This is my first rodeo doing Blog Talk Radio. So I was back here having some fun with the music and the DJing. Never had an opportunity to DJ back in the days. But this Blog Talk system allows us to do some pretty neat things. So I'm enjoying that. I see we have a bunch of callers already in the queue. I don't like to play music or an introduction for 30 minutes, so I wanted to cut that a little bit short and give everyone an opportunity to come in and get logged in, get your coffee, your pen, and your paper is a requirement. Speaking of requirements, I want to go into the rules of the game. As high-frequency radio listeners know, we have rules of the game. And it's no different here with Brother Sharif's show. These are the rules of the game. And I want everybody to understand them and respect them. This is not a puritanical show. What do I mean by puritanical? This is not a show regarding the practicing or affecting religion or moral behavior. There are other days where hosts on the High Frequency Radio Network will address those issues. This show is specifically about debt-related issues, and that's all we will be discussing and going over on Tuesdays at 11 is debt-related issues. It can be any kind of debt, an alleged mortgage debt, debt collector, any type of debt is what this show is geared and specifically for. Let's talk about the rules, okay? High Frequency Radio and all of its hosts that is upon this network offers these shows free of charge, okay? What do I mean by that, Brother Sharif? Free of charge meaning that when you come on this show, the information that you will get for 3 hours plus costs nothing to you. You have the opportunity to ask questions. You have the opportunity to get some short, specific answers, if at all possible, to those questions. Okay? But I want to be clear about this, and this is in all due respect to all of our listeners and all of the people out there that are in need, all of the great people of this particular nation. I want you to know that on this show, I will, as well as the rest of the hosts, do the best possible job we could to provide you with the information and knowledge that we have. It can be knowledge based on our research. It can be knowledge based on our experiences. But we're going to freely give you that information. I do not want you to be confused that the information and all of the information you will get on these shows will specifically help you in every scenario, okay? But I also want to provide this disclaimer to you. During this show, we will discuss a lot of things, okay? And when you ask a question, I ask that you keep those questions very narrow and specific and geared in order so that you can get an adequate answer. We cannot discuss your entire debt matter within a call or within a caller, okay? We cannot litigate your entire case or tell you how to do so or offer a suggestion or opinion about your matters on one specific show or one specific call. So I ask that you keep your questions short and try to obtain a direction is what we give here. We give you direction. What do I mean by that, Brother Sharif? Direction on where to possibly get that answer, or if the question is short, we will be able to provide you an answer. But let me tell you the tricky thing about answers. Some of us are somewhat lazy, and we're going to be completely honest here, and that's the only thing you'll get from me. We're lazy. We want the answer to our questions, but we don't want to do further research, or we don't want to obtain the information to be able to justify or explain that answer. Okay? Whenever you have went to school, many times teachers know that you can obtain answers from other students, from the internet, from your parents. So many times the tricky things that professors and educators, teachers do is that they know the answer is readily available. They will ask you a question sort of like this. Well, how did you arrive to that answer? How did you get that answer? Explain the answer to me. This is an example I like to provide for the High Frequency Radio listeners that just because you get an answer don't mean you understand that answer, how you arrived at that answer, what that answer means, okay? You're going to have to be proficient in this information to be able to acquire any remedy, okay, to be able to acquire any success. You're going to have to study not only the answer but the question and where the answer derived from, okay? So here, on High Frequency Radio. We will give you the best information we have available at that time, or in many instances, I will lead you to the answer as opposed to telling you the answer. And this is to avoid some of the lazy habits that we have by just wanting to get answers but not understanding the situation in its entirety. Also, I want to let you know, to all of our listeners, I receive a wealth of emails and compliments and questions. Some of those questions are very in-depth. Some of those questions are mini novels, okay? Outside of this show that I will do on Tuesday, outside of this show, if you're not able to obtain the answers or information to your questions and you want to contact myself or any other host on High Frequency Radio, outside of this show, we are all business people here, okay? So if you have a need for a service, I will provide that service to you, but that service is not free, okay? We're not waiting myself, Brother Youssef, or any of the other hosts. We don't close down our show and put on our headphones and do customer service for the High Frequency Radio listeners. If it's something simple, so sure, we might email you some information or email you some literature that we might have went over on the show, but I don't provide services. I will provide a consultation, okay, and there's a cost associated with it. If you need very detailed information and consultation or opinions or answers to questions that require me to utilize my time, there is compensation involved with that. So I say that respectfully because freedom is not free, and there's nothing that either you, the listeners, or we do here at High Frequency Radio that is free. Myself and the other hosts, as well as Youssef, spend hours and years and months researching, reading, studying, appearing, speaking, translating information for our knowledge, and that utilizes a lot of our time and a lot of our effort. In many cases, this is what we do for our living. So we just ask that the listeners respect that, and if you have a service need, after this show or any other show on High Frequency Radio, that you be mindful that the time you're asking for might require compensation for it. So now that we have that out the way, again, make sure your questions are short, sweet, and to the point. All right, we're going to go over a lot of things today. I have a special guest that informed me that he may not be able to make it today, and that was our priest Elishua. He's supposed to join us today. There is a good possibility that may not happen. If it doesn't, we're going to move on. I'm sure there's a lot of questions out there and a lot of things to talk about. So I'm going to start off. This show is going, I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over information. Rather, I want this to be more of an interactive show in where we can address questions and get some information flowing. So I'm not one that has very big speeches, but I kind of freestyle and let the conversation go where the spirit leads us. Okay, I will cover a few things starting off, and then I will get into questions and answers and comments and concerns. We're going to go over mostly on this show debt, and what I intend to do within this show is to aid you in removing some of the biggest economic restraints that is placed upon us by society, the banking industry, the legal society, and things of that nature. This show is designed for economic reasons. There are other shows that we get into esoterical things, we get into historical things, we get into religion, and all of those things are great, and I appreciate them. but they're very extensive. And if you know anything about me, if you heard me on previous shows, I don't too much get into battles about who was. I'm pretty concerned about who is. Okay? I'm concerned more about the facts than the hearsay. Okay? And you'll hear a lot of that from me throughout these shows. I don't know what happened 200 years ago. I can respect what happened, but I wasn't there. And I'm going to hopefully teach and educate the listeners on avoiding getting into arguments and debates about hearsay issues, about gossip, about statements as no factual basis. If we start training and conditioning our mind to do these things, it will aid us and assist us in being able to deal with debt issues. We are programmed and have been programmed since our public school system to pretty much believe what anybody says. And speaking of that, I don't want you to believe anything that I say. I want you to research it. I want you to look at it for yourself. I want you to get an understanding for yourself. Don't believe anything I say. Just because I sound good, I can always sound good to somebody that is not educated on the topic by which I speak. Anybody can sound good on topics that we have no knowledge of. I'm not a mechanic. If I go to a mechanic for some auto repairs, he's going to sound good to me because I don't know what he's talking about. But I will research what he's talking about. That's just my nature. I won't depend on what anybody says. I will go and conduct my research myself, especially if it's involving something of an economic stature. So my advice to you, study everything that I say. Have your pens and your papers. Write down what I'm saying, because my call will not be a call based on a bunch of people calling and asking questions if they haven't studied the information that I'm giving you, because I can't continue to start over giving information if you're not going to absorb that information and retain it so that our conversations and our shows progress into remedy and success. We can't do that if we get 50 callers asking the basic questions. I'm going to go over the basics with you. This show is going to be about the basics. This is class one on the basics of debt, okay? And if you are a beginner, this show is what you will refer to obtain your knowledge and information based on the basic fundamentals of debt. Before you come on to other shows, you need to start at class one and do your homework or make up your homework so that when you are on other calls, we're not going back to square one to discuss matters that you should have been present or been able to utilize the archives to obtain the information so that you can progress and keep up with the class, okay? So I'm going to go into a couple of things regarding what we're going to discuss here today. Is going to be the basics of the FDCPA. That is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, okay? I know many of you are going to be on this call, and you're going to have foreclosure issues. You're going to have or allege foreclosure issues. What you will get from this call today is hopefully a clear understanding of whether or not you have a foreclosure issue or a mortgage issue or a lender issue, a creditor issue, a mortgagee issue, or any derivative thereof. I can assure you more times than not, you will learn within this show and future shows that you may not have a mortgage issue, that you may not have a foreclosure issue, that, you know, I know Halloween was October 31st, but I'm going to show you, the listeners, how these pretender lenders and these alleged mortgagees and creditors and any other names they like to affectionately be labeled, how they are playing Halloween on you, meaning that they are wearing a mask that doesn't show their true identity. Okay? And they've been playing this game with you a very long time. It's a profitable game. It's a very, very rewarding game for those that don't know any better. Okay? So we're going to go over those things. We're going to hopefully be able to unmask some people that have identified themselves as your creditors. We're going to hopefully unmask some entities that will identify themselves as servicers, and they will rarely illuminate the fact that they are mere debt collectors. They might give you some hint. They might write a small quotation on your documentation or correspondence that they send to you. Okay? But I'm going to teach you how to identify those things. And the first thing you want to do dealing with any kind of debt is to identify who you're speaking to, who's communicating with you, whether they're being honest. No differently than you enter the door. You identify who is it at the door. And if your parents out there, usually you would tell your kids, don't answer the door for any strangers, or tell me who was at the door before you open it. These are things we do as parents. And this is the same thing you need to do with any type of debt or debt collector. And just to play it safe, do it to everybody, okay, that sends you correspondence, okay? Well, what do you mean by that, Mr. Sharif, identifying? Well, let's go to a street terminology so I can make sure that I'm reaching the higher and lowers of intellect, minds, okay? What I'm claiming to you is that you have some Halloween people, some monsters, some debt monsters, some villains, some Darth Vaders, attempting to confiscate and seize or extort money, revenue from you that more than likely is not due them. Let me go further. Let's go to the street with it, because I'm from New York. You can go downtown in New York, and you can buy just about every name brand merchandise in a knockoff version, okay? In a knockoff version, meaning that you can go downtown right now or in your city or in your state or in your hood, and you can go down and get you, let's say, a Gucci bag. And for all of our queens and goddesses that are listening, women know merchandise. Men know it too. All you GQ masters out there like to dress fly, name brand. We know name brand merchandise. Okay? So you can go downtown, and I often see when I am out, women will call you out if you're not authentic. Okay? So you can go downtown and buy you a Gucci bag. On that bag, it'll say Gucci. It'll look like a Gucci bag. It'll have the insignia, the stamp that appears to be a Gucci bag. Okay? But upon close inspection or upon a challenge, which some men or women would do, some women would say, girl, let me see that bag. Is that a real Gucci bag? All right? And for those queens and goddesses that know a real Gucci bag, they will be able to tell whether that's a real Gucci bag. And they might say, girl, that's not a real Gucci bag. That's one of them fake. That's one of them knockoff Gucci bags. You see how the stitching ain't right? Or you see how the gold on it is turning or tarnishing? Okay? Women and men, brothers might say, those are not authentic Gucci shoes, all right? Those are fake. You see how they peeling on the side? So we have an eye when we're dealing with authenticity and genuinity. We have the ability to be able to detect a fake from a distance, afar, or close proximity. We would all agree on that. Some of us do. Some of us don't. Okay? The point that I am making to you is that in this foreclosure arena, you have just about all of them are fake Gucci bags. And upon closer inspection, what I intend to do is to teach you how to identify a fake Gucci bag, rather a fake creditor, or a fake mortgagee, or a fake lender, or a fake pretender lender. Okay? I'm going to teach you how to identify a fake lender, a fake creditor, utilizing the instruments contained in your consumer protection laws, both federal and state. Okay? Those are the laws that we use to identify who is really communicating with us. Okay? Now, I'm going to go into several definitions and so that we have an understanding, and I ask that you write these definitions down. The FDCPA, which is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, is titled by 15 U.S.C. 1692. Okay? In your state, you're going to have consumer protection laws based on your state statutes. You will have to find those individually. Google is a good place for you to reference that or research that. Okay? If you're in California, for you California listeners, you're going to have the Rosenthal Act. Okay? Many other states will have something like deceptive practices or unfair practices statutes that almost do the same as your consumer protection laws. Some of those state laws are going to be strong. Some of them are going to be complementary to the FDCPA. Some of them are going to be weak. If you're in states like Kansas and Washington, okay, you have some pretty strong consumer protection laws there. In fact, they are stronger than the FDCPA, which is federal law. Okay? So you need to look into those things. But let's go over who the parties are. Let's go into identification, okay, of the FDCPA. Who are the parties that we're dealing with when they call and they say, I'm your mortgagor or your servicer? Okay? Let's go into a consumer. Consumer would be you. What's a consumer, Brother Sharif? A consumer is any natural person. Okay? You will find the definition of consumer in 15 U.S.C. 1692A as an apple. Okay? And it would be enumerated by the number 3. So it would be 1692A3. A consumer is any natural person. All right? It's not a trust. It's not a LLC. It's not an incorporation. It has to be a natural person. So if you put your property into a trust or any other statutory entity, or incorporate it in any way, you will not be able to use the FDCPA. And in fact, you may not be able to use some of your state consumer protection laws as well. All right, so it's only a natural person. All right, and I know on this show, you will learn a lot of information about different asset protection vehicles, such as trust, and things of that nature. And I know a lot of us get real happy and we take that information and we feel that when we put our property into a trust, all of our problems go away. You are absolutely wrong. In fact, when you do such things, if you are not mindful, you have to understand that when you put your property into one of those statutorily formed entities, you are putting yourself in a position on most occasions that you will have to be represented by a licensed attorney. Okay? You may have some success in some of the lower courts. Maybe you will be allowed as a trustee or as an officer of a corporation to be able to go into small claims court, and usually that is allowed, that you're able to speak for the entity or the trust or the corporation as an officer of that particular entity. You will have allowance from the lower courts in many cases. You may experience some acceptance from some of your state courts to represent a certain entity in a certain capacity. But you will have to check your local rules, okay, your local rules of court to determine whether that particular court allows officers or trustees or things of that nature to represent that statutorily formed entity without legal counsel. Okay, so just be mindful of that. Let's talk about a debt. What is a debt? Well, the FDCPA defines a debt as any obligation for money, goods, or services incurred primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. Okay? I'm going to read that again. A debt, any obligation for money, goods, services incurred primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. Okay? Let's get into it. And that's 15 U.S.C. 1692A5. All right? That is a debt. So let's speak about a mortgage. Is a mortgage a debt? Absolutely. It's for personal, family, or household purposes. All right? That is a debt. Let's define what a debt collector is. A debt collector, pursuant to 1692A6, okay, is the following. Third party who regularly collects the debts owed to another. Okay? A third party who regularly collects debts owed to another. That is a debt collector. It also includes attorneys. If this is what they do in the regular course of their business, attorneys can and in many cases will be defined a debt collector. All right? So, we have the definitions of a consumer, a debt, and a debt collector, all right? And hopefully everybody understands that, and hopefully you have the FDCPA pulled up so you can be able to read for yourself and gain an understanding of the meanings of those persons, artificial persons, okay? And you will find that in 1692. A, as an apple. All right? I'm going to go into a little bit more of the term debt collector so we have a full understanding of what a debt collector is. I'm going to read it in a little bit more detailed description. The term debt collector will mean any person who uses any instrumentality of interstate commerce or the mail in any business, the principal purpose of which is to collect the collection of any debts, who regularly collects or attempts to collect directly or indirectly debts owed or due or asserted to be owed or due another. Notwithstanding, okay, by clause F of the last sentence of this paragraph, and if you have the FDCPA up, you will know what clause F is. And again, I'm here to direct you to the information and educate you on what it says. I'm not here to find it for you. Okay? All right? Clause F, the last sentence of this paragraph, the term includes. Okay? And in this particular sense, includes mean what it says. Includes any creditor who, in the process of collecting his own debt, uses any other name other than his own, which would indicate that a third party is collecting or attempting to collect such debts. All right? So what do you mean by that? What do they mean by that, Brother Sharif? What they mean is if someone calls you claiming that they work for your alleged lender, creditor, or mortgagee, okay, But the information on that correspondence has their name and does and excludes the original alleged lender, creditor, or mortgagee, then they are a debt collector because they're a third party, right? They're a third party contacting you about a debt, not in the name of the original creditor. So what this is saying is that a creditor can be a debt collector. Let me give you an example. Okay, you had a mortgage or you had a debt with ABC Bank. Okay, ABC Bank sells your account or gives your information to, or solicits or contracts with a third party to collect, or let's say in the instance of a mortgage, servicer. Or service your particular account. And that servicer is a debt collector outfit. You will find today that you will get a lot of entities claiming to be servicers. Okay? Let me tell you why they do that. It's quite profitable to piggyback upon your old mortgage, deed of trust, loan agreement, and things of that nature. It is very profitable for these debt collectors to stop collecting defaulted cell phone bills, defaulted cable bills, defaulted and charged off credit card bills. You know, those that's small time. I mean, for those of you who have no knowledge, you've probably been sued by debt collectors and you probably lost cases like that. But these days, with the current condition of the mortgage industry, with the abundance of fraud that exists, you have debt collectors that were doing credit card debts and mom and pop, you know, little credit card debts. They now jumped into the big business of mortgages, and they've changed their name from Joe Blow debt collector to Joe Blow servicer, okay? Just because they say they're a servicer does not make it so. What do we have to do, Brother Sharif? We got to identify who they really are. Because, you know, as a servicer, that's some pretty good money for them to take your mortgage contract, which is going to be existing and filed in the county recorder, meaning that it's public, okay, public knowledge, okay, publicly filed documents. And they'll pull those documents up, and they'll see that you have a note filed in the county. You have a mortgage filed, an alleged mortgage, an alleged note filed in the county. They'll see you made a loan for $100,000. They might buy that information from the defunct bank, or they might buy the information from the original lender who has knowledge of the loan that you did, who sold their interest probably years ago and still maintains your customer file with all the information. All right. So what these lenders do after they've been satisfied, or the loan, alleged loan and mortgage note has been sold into the secondary market, they will maintain that information or retain that information, and they will sell it off to debt collectors. These debt collectors will take that information, which is all your a copy of all your information that you used or was utilized for you to obtain the alleged loan, and they will sell that information to a third-party debt collector, and that third-party debt collector will play Halloween with you, and they will say, we're your new servicer, okay? And because they have some information as far as your interest rate and when your last payment was, because that lender who sold that loan many years ago retained all that information, okay, then they will sit up there and they will provide you or proffer you some information that sounds pretty accurate. It'll say your last payment date was this particular day and you had a loan on that particular day and your interest rate was this and you had an adjustable rate mortgage and it was due to adjust on this particular day. So they'll have some pretty good information that will appear to be accurate. The truth is, though, it's really not accurate. All right? So they will take that information and they will begin to act as if they are servicers without you knowing, and depending on the naivety, lack of knowledge, lack of education, and based on the honest nature of the American people, because we are responsible people, most of us are, okay? And we all, in some form or fashion, have a conscience. So when we get correspondence from these debt collectors posing as servicers and creditors and mortgagees and lenders, we will automatically begin to engage them in subject matter. What do you mean by subject matter? Brother Sharif, subject matter is just what it says, the subject matter of that subject. We will begin communicating with them without thinking, without identifying, without corresponding, without having them prove to us who they say they are. And if you, after this call or any other call you've listened to of mine, if you haven't begun to transform your mind into identifying who you're dealing with, while you know that the mortgage industry is in a mess right now, you know that there's very difficult for any debt collector to prove that you owe any debt. I don't care who they are. And it is, I'm telling you right now, and I'm going to be very clear with you, there is not a debt collector on this earth that can prove anything about a debt unless you admit it. I'm going to say that one more time. There is not a debt collector on this earth that can prove you owe anything in terms of a debt. Let me give you a small percentage. There may be a small percentage of them that may be able to. But when it comes to the condition of the mortgage industry right now, many of the original lenders, alleged lenders, are gone. They're out of business. They're bankrupt. They've been shut down. They've been seized by the FDIC, by the Office of the Comptroller. They went bankrupt. Okay? So if that one of those entities were your original lender, okay, and your alleged mortgage was transferred, sold, assigned at the time you were in default, and trust me, most of the time that is going to be the case, it was transferred while you were in default, then you are dealing with a debt collector, okay? As simple as that. So the game begins to change when you're dealing with a debt collector as opposed to dealing with a mortgagor or a mortgagee, excuse me, or a servicer or a creditor or a lender. The language and the laws that govern them are totally different. So many times I will look on the internet and I'll be on other shows and I will hear people and I hear all of us make the mistake of trying to follow all of this conflicting and contradicting case law that is out there. You will have judges that will say one thing, and then you will have another judge say totally another thing. How can you keep up with that? I used to do that years ago. I used to try to follow all of it. Your TILA, your RESPA, your Dodd-Frank Act, your all of those different laws that governs mortgagors, mortgagees, creditors, lenders. That's their language. That's their laws. If you have a mortgagee or a true creditor or lender in front of you, indeed, those are the laws that apply to them. And if you feel you're going to be successful, you can go and plead those remedies under TILA and RESPA and the Truth in Lending Act and all those other different remedies that will be afforded to you if you're dealing with those parties. But if you are not dealing with those parties, okay, then you are speaking the wrong language to the wrong people, okay? I always use the reference that, you know, I grew up in New York, and I grew up around a lot of Dominicans and Hispanics, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and Cubans, okay? And at a young age, I was always not sure about who was who, okay? I thought they all were the same until I dated one, and I called one of them Puerto Rican, and they happened to be Dominican. And if any of you on the call are of that ethnicity, you will know that is a very big mistake. You do not call a Dominican a Puerto Rican. You don't call a Puerto Rican a Dominican. My point is you do not call a debt collector a servicer. You do not call a debt collector a creditor. You do not call them a lender. You do not send a debt collector a QWR, a qualified written request. Why are you sending a debt collector a QWR? When you do that, let me tell you what you do, okay? What happens when you do that, Brother Sharif? Well, being that they just went and piggybacked off of your mortgage documents, you haven't identified them, and they've sent you, they send the little debt collector that was collecting cell phone, defaulted cell phone bills, is now trying to masquerade themselves as servicers and creditors. So they're sending you, instead of sending little dunning letters, which is what that is called when a debt collector communicates with you, it's called a dunning, D-U-N-N-I-N-G letter. Okay, so instead of sending you a dunning letter for $202 for the Sprint cell phone bill you didn't pay, they're stepping up into the big time now. They're sending you mortgage statements for $2,386. Or they're saying you're in default for 2 years and you owe $200,000. You see how profitable it is now for these debt collectors to jump on this bandwagon as opposed to trying to collect your old electricity bill that you didn't pay. It's big money. And I'm telling you right now, there's a lot of you on this call that's been suckered into believing that you were talking to a servicer and a mortgagee and a lender and a creditor because you failed to identify them. You failed to read your paperwork. You failed to do some research, okay, which we're all guilty of at some point. But you have to identify who you're talking to, okay? So if you send them a QWR, what are you doing? You're saying, I believe you are my servicer. You are my mortgagee. You are the person that lent me money or services. You are the person responsible, or you have a nexus or connection or relationship with the alleged creditor or original creditor that, upon your belief, lent you some money. Okay, or some services. Okay, so once you send that letter to them, I can assure you they're jumping up and down in the office saying, we got another one. Okay, they sent you a mere letter saying, hey, you're behind 18 months on your mortgage payment. You're in default. We're about to do a foreclosure on you. Okay, and I don't mean to laugh, but it's just, it's funny when you actually start to discover the information I'm going to provide to you. You will do one or two things. You either pluck yourself upside the head or you might beat yourself up a little bit. But either one is okay as long as you make the transformation in your mind of who you're dealing with. Okay? Again, I'm going to read the definition of creditor. All right? A creditor means any person who offers or extends credit, creating a debt, or to whom a debt is owed, but such term does not include, listen to me very carefully, okay? And I'm reading you again from 1692A4, the meaning of a creditor, all right? So when I use these words, you should be able to understand what they mean and who they are, all right? The term creditor does not include any person to the extent that he receives an assignment. And all of you probably have received some form of an assignment. It can be from MERS. It can be from the debt collectors themselves. It looks like, you know, it looks legitimate, all right? It looks like it's something that a creditor would do. You know, it's easy for them to do that. They can Google them and see how the assignments look and how they're formed and structured and written, all right, which is what they do, okay? But the term creditor does not include any person that receives an assignment or transfer of a debt in default, okay? meaning that if you get a letter from a alleged servicer today and they say you owe 2 years' worth of payments and they're sending you a letter, a Dunning letter today, you can assume that they received the debt, if they received it at all, while it was in default, which changes the governing law that they become applicable to. All right? So if they received an assignment or transfer of the debt in default solely for the purpose of facilitating collection of such debt for another. So if they received your debt while it was in default and they received it, which debt collectors only receive debt solely for the purpose of facilitating collection. So when you don't pay your mortgage bill or your telephone bill, okay, or your utility bill, the company is usually going to charge it off and sell it to a debt collector. And that debt collector is not buying that debt to work out something with you or to have your services put back on. They're contacting you expressly for the purpose of collecting that debt, meaning that they want the money. All right? So in that sense, they would be disqualified as a creditor. Okay? Hopefully everyone understands that. They are not a creditor. So if they are not a creditor, how can they be a servicer? Okay? If they're not a creditor, how can they be a mortgagee? How can they be a lendor? Okay? So now that we understand that more likely than not, we're dealing with debt collectors, okay, and not creditors, what method of communication, Brother Sharif, would we have with these imposters? The communication for them would be under the FDCPA and your consumer, state consumer protection laws. All right? That's how we communicate with them. Now, let me tell you the opposite of what you're probably doing now, because I see the fancy QWRs, and some of them are 20 pages long, and give me a copy of the note, give me a copy of the FAS report, and give me a copy of the front and back of the note, and give me a copy of the pooling and service agreement, and give me all insurance associated with this loan, and give me the history of how much you applied and debited from this account. Give me an accounting of the escrow account. I mean, I've seen it all, and I've used it. I'll be honest with you. I've used it. It almost, some of these QWRs look like complaints. Okay? They're 10, 8, 9 pages long. Okay? So you'll send that QWR to the debt collector. All right? And the debt collector will be happy that you, first of all, think that they are a creditor or a servicer. And they will gladly attempt to paste and cut and puzzle together something that appears to be an answer to your QWR. And they will derive that information from information they got from maybe the alleged original creditor, or maybe from somebody that was in that particular bank that had all your personnel file information in there about the loan. And, you know, they'll piece together and they'll tell you, although they sent you a letter, let's say today, saying that you're 2 years behind, they'll send you a payment history that was pasted together from a company or entity that is no longer here. Okay? And they'll say, well, based on the information we have, and they'll make it look real good for you, they'll say, we determine that you owe $200,000 on your mortgage because you really haven't made a payment, or you made two payments, or you made three payments. Or sometimes, if you had a $200,000 loan, they'll say you owe $250 on it or $350. You know, how that math works, I'm not quite sure of, all right? But these are things that they will say, okay? So they're going to send you a response to the QWR, and if you're smart and you catch it later, you'll say, you know what, I'm sorry. I sent you a QWR thinking you was a creditor. But after doing some research or listening to high-frequency radio or Brother Sharif or anybody else, I determined I sent you the wrong letter. So let me give you the correspondence that pertains to you. okay? And that's going to be a debt validation dispute letter, which is how you communicate with a debt collector, okay? And where do you find that, Brother Sharif? You will find a debt validation letter, which is simple. And then let me add this before I go further into formulating letters. Nowhere, no time, and at any point do I believe in the word templates, okay? I don't believe in templates. I get a lot of emails, hey, can I get a template, or can I get that process, or can I get that administrative process? And I understand that most of you don't understand what these terms mean, and I understand that sometimes when you use these terms, you use them out of context, okay? I don't have a process. The information that I'm giving you and the information that I obtain from experience and research and demonstrating and executing. We don't have templates. All of us on this call and on this earth at some point throughout our years as kids, adolescents, and adults have had to write something, be it a love letter, an essay, a resume, a report, a Sunday school speech, whatever have you. We have the ability to write, okay? We have the ability to read, and from reading, be able to formulate a memorandum of what we've read, okay? And that's it. So I will give you examples and samples of how to have the correct format in writing, but I will not write anything for you because this is the lazy part of learning that causes us to have these economic restraints upon us, is that we don't want to read, we don't want to study, and we don't want to write. And we think that there's such a complicated task of writing something, writing a simple statement of fact. Okay, and it's very easy. We've believed throughout the years that these complex litigation cases between banks and the legal society, which gives the appearance of being something that is totally out of our reach and our realm, we begin to think that that's reality. Well, I'm sure I'm not the first one that's told you. I'm sure Brother Youssef have told you probably a million times that that is not reality. What you see in these cases is not reality. It's reality for those that believe it's reality. You can get two attorneys that's going to go into a case, and they will argue till the cows come home. And it is just that. It's an argument. Okay? Understand the difference in an argument and facts. Okay? You and your girlfriend or your woman or your husband may argue. Okay, and you may argue about opinions, or you may argue about perceptions, but many times those arguments are not about facts, because with facts, there is no argument. A fact is what it is. It's a fact. Now, you can argue you don't like the fact, or you can argue you don't agree with the facts, but it doesn't change the dimension of what a fact is. Okay, so simply writing a statement of facts is very easy. So you won't get samples. You won't get processes. You won't get anything of that nature from us or anybody. What you will get is information on how to write your own and how to learn how to develop effective writing skills and not to be discouraged by the fanciness and complexity of the legalese language. I'm going to tell you 100% factually that you don't need to have all those fancy words, most of which you use, you don't know what they mean, because that is a language in and of itself, and the people that understand that language is licensed to receive the translation of that language. Most of the time, you are not. So when you try to piggyback on the legalese language, you're going to find yourself, okay, knee-deep in an arena in language that you don't understand. In other words, if I went to Russia today, okay, I would be very careful on trying to say something Russian to the cab driver or anybody else if I'm not familiar with it. Okay, those of you over in the States, you will pick up on different languages used by Hispanics. You will pick up on some terminology used by Asian people, okay? Some of those words are very safe. Some of them, if you say them, you can be offensive if you use it incorrectly, okay? So let's not think that we have to go into these matters using very difficult legalese words or piggybacking on the legal society and how we communicate. That language is for them. Okay, and when you begin to try to involve yourself or engage these people with that language takes you into dimensions that you do not want to be a part of. Okay, because those definitions will change on you. It is not the common English language, and they will be speaking to you, or you will try to adapt some of their words, and they will totally, and they're supposed to, because they're licensed, take those words and choke you with it because you have no business using them. You are the most powerful person when it comes to debt, okay, if you're dealing with a mortgage or an alleged mortgage. Why? Why do you say that, Brother Sharif? Because you're probably the only person that has firsthand knowledge. What does that mean, Brother Sharif? You're probably the only person that has the facts. Let's give an example. You got a mortgage or an alleged mortgage, or you believe that you received a mortgage or a loan in 2005. Okay? Let's assume that your mortgage was sold into the secondary market. And when I say secondary market, what I'm speaking about is securitization. Okay? Let's say it was sold into the secondary market. Usually that occurs several months from the time you closed on the alleged loan. Okay, so what did I just say? The original alleged creditor, if the loan was sold into the secondary market, means that they were paid in full. Okay, they were compensated. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go into the complexities of the securitization because what I am trying to do is to transition your mind from going into all of those different terminologies and case laws and that big old discotheque of contradicting information. It will be way more simpler and way more effective if you identify who you're dealing with and apply the appropriate law to their behavior. Okay? That's simply what you want to do. Okay? So, it was sold into securitization, the secondary market, and, you know, somehow in many cases you didn't get proper notice, okay? And hopefully all of you by now, and I see this a lot, that we're dealing with mortgage issues or alleged mortgage issues, and we don't read our mortgage. We don't read our deed of trust. We don't read our security instrument. We don't even know what they're able to do and what they're not able to do, okay? And this is for just those who are really dealing with a genuine creditor, okay? But what I'm speaking is up to this point, if you're listening to my show and you're listening to me, probably up to this point, you were playing mortgagor and they were playing mortgagee. Meaning you were under the impression, okay, and it's self-inflicted, that you were dealing with some true creditors that had an interest or had the authority to demand payments from you or your property, okay? So if you was under that impression, you probably made the mistake of talking with them, maybe sending them a payment, maybe making an arrangement with them, okay? Because you didn't know, at least up to this point, you were dealing with debt collectors, okay? One or two things a debt collector can do, and I'll give you this example. Let's say you had a Visa card, and you took that Visa card and you used it, Let's say you had it for a year. You fell upon bad times, and the last purchase you made, you went and you bought yourself a brand new living room suite, nice cream leather, white. You bought yourself some, let's go to the street with it. You bought some 22s and some 10-inch TVs for your whip, for your car, for your conveyance, okay? You bought your wife a nice engagement ring. You bought you some ice to go around your neck, nameplate or something, all right? And you put that charge on your Visa card. You turn around next month. If you're in the streets wasn't doing well, you didn't have enough money. You lost your job or, you know, a repair came up, threw your economic stability off. So you didn't pay the Visa card bill, and Visa called you several times and said, hey, we're about to cut your card off, and we're about to close your account, charge her for your account if you don't pay it. Well, you don't pay it, and they charge it off, all right? And they turn around and they sell it to a debt collector, okay? Many of you have probably experienced that particular scenario, and I'm going to show you how we think not in the proper fashion when dealing with debt. Well, what I just described to you, a Visa card is a debt. All of us would agree. So let's say they sell that Visa card debt to a debt collector, and the debt collector calls you and say, hey, we are portfolio recovery, and we obtained this debt. And this is an attempt to collect the debt. And you owe $20,000 for that necklace you bought, that engagement ring, that living room furniture, the 20-inch 22s you bought, the TVs for your car. Well, let me ask all of you a simple question. Did any of you ever get a knock on the door at your house, or did a debt collector follow your wife to work and come to her cubicle and say, hey, I'm from Portfolio Recovery or ABC Debt Collection Company. I need that ring off your finger. And my man, I need that chain off your neck. And then we're in your driveway, and we jacking it up right now, okay? We going Brooklyn on you. We jacking up your car. We taking them 22s off because you bought that with that credit card. You didn't pay for it. And then we're going to get a locksmith go up in your house, or if you're home, we'll catch you home, and we're going to go and take that living room set from you, okay? Have any of you ever experienced that? I'm going to venture to say no. Well, let's talk about why. This is what you probably did experience. You owe $20,000 for those purchases that you made. Basically, you want to make a payment plan with us on the $20,000, or we're going to take you to court and sue you for the $20,000. Okay? That's one of the two options they're going to offer you in that Dunning letter. Either they're going to sue you if they're within the statutory time frame, or they're going to ask you to make a payment arrangement with the debt collector. And many of you are going to either ignore it, or you're going to say, you know what, I'm still wearing that chain around my neck. My wife still got that engagement ring. Every time I go to my car, I see them 22s and them TVs. I feel guilty. I'm going to go ahead and pay y'all $100 a month till I pay it off. Well, the debt collector, again, they're celebrating, okay? But the point of what I'm saying is that they never appeared at your home or anywhere else to repossess the merchandise that you allegedly purchased. So, and of course, if they could, I'm sure they would. Okay, so what are you saying, Brother Sharif? If they didn't do that with that particular debt, then how is it that you feel or you think or you come to the conclusion that they can purchase a defaulted debt for pennies on the dollar, okay, sometimes even nothing, depending, and years later send you a letter saying, hey, we about to take your house. We're about to foreclose on you. Okay, I'm about to put you out your house because you didn't pay a debt, okay? Hopefully you guys get what I'm saying, okay? A debt collector is not entitled, in most cases, to property. Well, where is that listed, Brother Sharif? In the FDCPA, okay? Well, those of you who have it up, and hopefully everybody does, Let's go find it. That would be listed in 1692I of the FDCPA. And what it states is, any debt collector who brings any legal action on a debt, any consumer shall, one, in the case of an action to enforce a interest in real property, securing the consumer's obligation, bring such action only in a judicial district or similar legal entity in which such real property is located. I'll read that one more time. In the case of an action to enforce an interest in real property, securing a consumer's obligation, bring such action only in a judicial district or similar legal entity in which the real property is located. Okay? In the case of an action not described in paragraph 1, okay, bring such action only in the judicial district or similar legal entity in which the consumer signed the contract sued upon or in which such consumer resides at the commencement of the action. Let's explain that and talk about that for a minute for all you that are experiencing non-judicial foreclosures. Okay? The FDCPA prohibits, okay, a debt collector, if you're dealing with a debt collector, and you will have to identify that based on the knowledge I just aforementioned, but if you're dealing with a debt collector and they want to go after your real property, they have to do it in a judicial fashion, either where the property is located or, for those of you that own properties abroad, and you might own several properties but still domicile in other states, then they have to bring that action in the state where you reside at the commencement of that lawsuit. So don't tell me you're experiencing a non-judicial foreclosure with a debt collector. They may have you believe you're dealing with a foreclosure, but I subscribe to you, you're really not dealing with a foreclosure. You're dealing with somebody you believe to be a creditor or a lender, and they're making you believe they're doing a foreclosure, but I just read you the law that says they're not able to do so in that fashion. Okay? So I know I went into several things. I'm going to go to the lines. Hopefully that'll open up for me to provide more information, but that is the foundation, okay? And what I'm going to do is give you foundation. It is up to you to build your own house, okay? Those of you that know building or have a home, okay, usually the foundation, well, it's a must, the foundation has to be poured and built first. The foundation is probably one of the most important elements to building anything, whether it's a nation, whether it's a class, whether it's a group. The foundation of, or as a corporation, the foundation of that particular group you're building or of that particular edifice that you're building must be pretty strong, contain the right weight, the right ingredients in order to hold your house. What I'm giving you on this show every Tuesday is foundation, okay? You're going to build your own house. You're going to design it like you want. You want a duplex, you can build a duplex. You can double up with knowledge on your consumer protection laws, on your federal consumer protection laws, okay? You can build a single-family house. You just want to keep it real basic, okay? You don't want to get all intricate with it. You may not have a mortgage issue. Then you're going to be dealing with fundamental debt collectors, all right? Build your house the way you see fit, but the foundation is the most important, and the foundation is going to come from studying, understanding, and taking the time out to learn, because these are issues, and I hear on these shows, I hear a lot of shows, we deal with a lot of issues regarding many other things that don't help us grow as a nation, that does not help us excel as a nation. Because as a nation or as a people or as an individual, okay, you first have to have knowledge, because knowledge is power, okay? And then from power and knowledge, you morph into economic stability, okay? And if you have a mortgage or if you're a victim to debt collectors stealing your energy illegally, okay, then you must lack power and knowledge, and you're definitely going to be an economic slave, and most of us are. Not because we have to be, but because we're too busy doing other things or participating in other arguments, be it religion or anything else. And we're constantly in economic slavery. Okay? So the foundation I'm going to give you will aid you in increasing your self-worth. Okay, monetarily. If you begin with the foundation based on the FDCPA and the FCRA, which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and your consumer protection laws, okay, you will begin to easily, and I'm going to repeat the word easily, you will begin to free up many of those economic restraints, and it's not difficult. And I'm going to show you how easy it is, because many times I talk to people, and because we're so intellectual, we think, and because we read so many of these case laws, and we look at all the banking industry problems, and we get so intertwined in those matters that we think it's no way in the world we can really handle this big law firm or this big bank. Well, I'm going to tell you straight up, if that's the way you think, you're already defeated. Because you can easily handle those big industries. It happens every day. It happens multiple times a day. And you can obtain, not only better your situation, remove that debt, get them off your back, but have them pay you for the attempt. And notice I said, okay, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we're your new servicer, okay, we're your new creditor, all right, and we need you to pay us this $119,000 you're behind for the last 2 years, or we're going to take your property. And you determine and realize that Halloween is over, but they still somehow have their mask on, and you pull that mask off, and you say, oh, man, I thought you were a creditor. You're a debt collector? That was a good try, man, but you don't have to pay me for that attempt, brother, because that's a deceptive act, okay? And that is prohibited by most consumer protection laws, specifically the FDCPA. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines to our callers and see what questions we can answer. I'm going to start from the top. Bear with me. This is my first time using Blog Talk, but I'm going to open up a couple of lines. We're going to go first to the 661 area code ending in 0241. Your line is now open. You are on the air. Do you have a question?
Hello?
0241, your line is open. Do you have a question?
Hello.
All right. Hello. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. My question is, I'm just about to...
All right, you on the speakerphone, my brother?
Yes, I am.
Yes, can you get off the speaker and put your handset on? I can't hear you, kind of fading.
I'm doing Skype right now, man.
Okay, well, turn your volume up.
All right, let me see what I can do here. All right, can you hear me better now?
It's a little bit better. I think if you just project your voice a little bit stronger, that'll help. Well, go ahead with your question.
Okay. I am just about to close on a property, okay? And my question is, if I start doing this process as far as seeing whether or not they have accurate numbers on my mortgage, and because I'm including closing costs in my mortgage and all that stuff, and seeing if my ultimate loan amount is going to be accurate, and I don't want to go into default, because I don't want to screw up my credit report, is there a way that I can do some sort of process and try to see if I could get some sort of remedy.
I'm a little confused on your question. You said you're about to close on a property?
Right. I'm about to close. I'm in New York. And I'm buying this two-family. And my question is, I'm trying to think ahead here. You know what I mean? Once I get the property, I just want to make sure that the numbers are correct. Because yesterday, I was listening to your previous calls that you said that you can do a process like this even if you're current on your mortgage. You know, and as a matter of fact, it'll be probably better to do it because it's more proactive. On your previous call, you mentioned something to that effect. So that's why I'm calling
sure.
to see how would that work.
I'm still a little confused on your question. It sounds like you said you have a mortgage or you're current, but then you're telling me you're doing a closing on a mortgage. So your question might be a little bit off topic, but if you are current on your alleged mortgage, yes, the identifying process must happen. You need to know that you're paying your payments to the proper creditor or mortgagee. And basically in that particular situation, and if you are current and your mortgage is in order, then you use a QWR to communicate and ask particular questions to make sure, check your county records, okay, and ask some specifically designed questions to communicate with that creditor and say, I want to ensure that you are my creditor. Can you send me certain documentation and information on any transfers, any assignments, any changes in ownership? And that would basically help you with the identification process. But as far as you closing on a mortgage, I think that's off topic and not related to what we're speaking about. We're speaking about debt or mortgage issues. Closing sounds like you're making a purchase. So I don't need to give you any information on that. However, I will say that you should do your research and make sure you're not purchasing a property that's been subject to most of the fraud that's been existing in this foreclosure arena, because you may have some recourse or some responsibility later on if one of my listeners were to wake up and realize their property was taken illegally. You might become the recipient of a very long lawsuit and litigation process. So hopefully that answered your question. I'm going to move on to the next caller. Caller ended in 7667 from 786 area code. Your line is now open. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. What's your question?
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know, we've been dealing with one bank, and I'd like to know, why did they assign shortly after the reverse mortgage to another bank when the person, you know, and when the person, like my mom, she died, and they said that we were in default with the assigned bank. So, you know, you look online and you look at the information on the property, and it says, you know, we just have a mortgage there. And also the second question that I have is, could attorney be a debt collector? Can an attorney who says he represents a bank be a debt collector?
Okay. Your question is, you know, your question, if I understand it correctly, is that you did a reverse mortgage, okay, which still doesn't circumvent the fact that it is a debt, okay, all an alleged debt. If you're alleged mortgage or debt was assigned to a second or third party after it was in default, meaning to yesterday, last month, let's say you stopped making payments in October, and in November that debt was assigned to someone else, okay, while it was in default, that person, the recipient, the assignee, becomes a debt collector by operation of law. So they are a debt collector, meaning a lot of changes occurred there. They transitioned from mortgagee, lender, creditor protected laws to consumer protection laws, okay? It's a transition regarding how they are governed, what they can do and what they can't do. So if you determine from that assignment that they were assigned that debt while it was in default, then they are a debt collector. pertaining to your second question, if it was assigned to that assignee and they're a debt collector and an attorney is assisting or representing that debt collector, they are indeed a debt collector. Both the attorney and the third-party debt collector are both debt collectors. Absolutely. Hopefully that answered your question. I'm going to go on to the next call.
Sir.
Let's go down. Sir. Yes. All right, let's go down to 301 area code, ending in 5100. You're on high frequency radio. Do you have a question?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, how you doing?
Doing well.
Okay, great.
Good,
hey, look, I got one problem, you know, with another problem, you know. It's the thing, I know you, I've been listening, following you and everything, and you talked about people who done modifications. Now, I did a modification, of course, not knowing no better. You know, I'm just about a year into this thing, into the knowledge of what's going on. Now, give me some, I know I have to have some options. Now, I'm thinking about going through another process, but I know I have to have some options to pursue the process using the fair credit debt.
Okay. I understand your question, and I'm glad it's a good question, and I'm glad you brought that up because I'm sure it's going to help a lot of listeners that are out there. Modification, in my humble opinion, although in many cases it provides some relief for those that are not educated, for those that don't have the knowledge that I and others may have, it can provide some relief to you. So I don't beat up people that's done a modification, because once you come into the awareness of debt, then you probably wouldn't do that the next time. But let's talk about modification, because you have to understand that debt collectors will often, this is their best weapon, and I want everybody to listen to me clear. Let's say that the scenario I gave you earlier, you received a letter, a dunning letter, and, you know, the debt collector was masquerading as a creditor or servicer.
Yes.
Okay?
Right.
And they sent you a letter, and they say, listen, you owe us $2,000 for your last month payment. Send your $2,000 in. Once you send that payment in, okay, without identifying who you are dealing with, you just now re-aged and validated that particular debt. Once you make any payment on it, okay, once you make any agreement with them or any payment arrangement, once you've done that without identifying who's at the door and you let him in, now he's in the house. Now he can take advantage of you. Now he can say that you let me in. I didn't break in, okay, so to speak. All right, using parables. So you did that modification. Many times, these loans are sold into the secondary market, okay, which means they are the loan payments are owned by the investors via securitization. So many times, the first thing that a debt collector will do is they will send you modification paperwork, because once you fill that out, they got you. You can't sit up there and talk about it not a debt collector, because you already made an arrangement with them. You applied for services, or you applied for a loan, or termed a modification with that debt collector. Now you've basically forfeited a lot of the defenses you would have had you not. But many times that modification, let's say if you, and probably you and many others on this call, you will get a notice saying that your loan is owed by Bank of New York Mellon certificate holders for the ABC LMNOP Trust 2012. Many of you identify with those type of correspondence, okay? And what that's telling you is that your loan was sold into the secondary market, okay? And you will probably have an entity like a masquerading servicer, like, let's say, Ocwen Financial, all right? And they'll say, we're your servicer, and Bank of Mellon, New York, is the trustee for the certificate holders for the ABC LMNOP 2013 trust, okay? And they'll say, listen, you're behind. The first thing they'll offer you is a modification. They want to go on and lock you in into the belief that they're your creditor and lender. So they want to get something with your signature on it. They want to get you applying for something. They want to get your agreement on something. Now, I urge all of you that has modifications, has done them, I want you to read it. Because if you read it, you will see probably out of 10 enumerated paragraphs that 7 of them are going to talk about what you are waiving.
You waive all defenses that we are not your mortgagee, that we are not your creditor, and you will see 10 agreements. You will agree that you will make all the payments to us, and you will do this, and you will not fight this later, okay? Brother Yusuf talks about all the time, if you don't assert those rights, you waive them. So, you know, they're going to have that on that language in it, and you're going to sign that, and you're going to send it back. Two things I want you to look for. One is that the letters that you received prior to the modification at all times relevant said that the Bank of New York was acting as a trustee for the investors of the securitization trust, the REMIC. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so they're telling you that the loan allegedly is owned by investors via securitization. So one would think, if you had any common sense, you would use that and say, okay, well, you know, sounds like my original lender got paid, one. That's the first thing to come to your mind. And they sold it to some investors, and those investors allegedly has an interest in it. I won't go into how they don't because we're focusing on debt collectors, okay? But I'm giving you the scenario. So you will get that modification paperwork, and you will notice quite easily that the modification paperwork, let's say if Ocwen Financial was your servicer, that paperwork will usually say that you are modifying your loan not with Bank of New York Mellon as trustee and not with the investors via the securitization trust. It will say you are modifying with Ocwen. Well, then if the securitization trust owned it, then how does your modification paperwork say Ocwen? You understand the trick there? And those of you who've done modifications, you are all victims of that trick if you read your modification documentation. You are never modifying with these REMICs or these investment trusts, never modifying with them. Your modification paperwork will always have the previous original alleged lender, meaning that if you had Bank of America initially, Bank of America usually within the first several months of you closing your mortgage, they will transition from lender to servicer. You won't notice that change because they'll send you a nice little letter and say, well, welcome to Bank of America, and you're just thinking you're communicating with your original creditor. But it'll say Bank of America is now your servicer. It'll say something very simple like that, and you didn't pick up the transition from lender to servicer. But that usually means they sold into the secondary market and they're now the servicer. But when you modify, it'll have Bank of America on it. Well, if you were the servicer working for somebody, working for the creditor, allegedly, how is the modification in your name? Okay? So I wanted to address that. Now, what do you do once you find yourself in a modification? Excuse me. You are the victim of fraud. There's no statute of limitations on fraud. You can bring an action, okay, for fraud, which is difficult in some cases to prove the intent, because you have to prove intent with fraud, okay? But you can bring an action and say that, look, I was misled, okay? It was a deceptive practice for this particular alleged debt collector to pose as a creditor or lender for the purposes of leading me into a modification they couldn't possibly perform. And many times they couldn't perform a modification. Many times you would have to get into the pooling and service agreement and see if it was, first of all, none of these loans were securitized correctly, so you never want to say that it was securitized. You always want to use language very specifically. You want to say it was attempted to be securitized or sold into the secondary market, because any of us that read a little bit would understand that these transactions were not done pursuant to the pooling and service agreement or pursuant to even state mortgage law or federal law at that. So what I would do in your case, okay, because a debt collector just got rich off of you, and I'm going to be honest with you because I'll be blunt, okay? You had a debt collector that made a pay 5 or 10 cents for your mortgage. Say you had a $100,000 mortgage, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say they paid 5 or 10 cents on a dollar, which is the going rate for defaulted debt. You can go on the FDIC today, and if you pool your money with some other people, if me and you, Seth, and High Frequency Radio Group wanted to purchase some debt, we can go to the FDIC and we can buy $100,000 worth of defaulted debt for probably 10 grand, okay? And we can come and send you guys some letters and start taking your houses and your property and garnishing your wages. That's how easy it is. Okay, so let's say you had a $100,000 mortgage and they paid 5 or 10 cents on a dollar. So they paid $1,000, let's just use as an example, for your mortgage paperwork, okay? All right? So they turned around, sent you a modification offer, dropped your payment a little bit, or at least you think they did, and masqueraded themselves as a creditor, had you close your eyes for a minute, and they said, I'll tell you what we do, what we're doing. You had a $100,000 mortgage. We're going to do a principal reduction. We're going to knock down the interest rate. Your payments was $1,500. We're going to knock you down to $1,000. We might even forgive you your defaulted payments, your past payments, all right? And you'll be like, wow, that's a deal, honey. We can keep the house for $1,000 and reduce our mortgage by $500 a month, and they're going to waive all the fees. Yeah, that's what's probably what you went through. It sounds good. I mean, honestly, it really does sound good. Sound real good. So you just like, well, honey, we can start all over. But what you just did was you made that debt collector $99,000 richer just on principal alone, and he's going to make probably three times that amount in interest. You just validated and re-aged and gave this debt collector a brand new note. So let me tell you what that did. That took them from a debt collector to a creditor, all right? Mm. Because you actually applied and consummated an agreement with them to buy your house back, which they only had $1,000 in, and now they got you on a $100,000 modification plus interest, and now you've waived all your defenses, so now you just did a brand new loan. See how they could create money out of thin air when the Patriots say that? Yeah. They just created money out of thin air. All right? So, brother, what you want to do in that case is, and I'll wrap it up, is that you just want to do some more research and bring an action against them saying that the modification was done by a party that didn't have the authority to do so. They were never a creditor. They were never a lender. They were never a mortgagee. They were a debt collector. They participated in deceptive practices, unfair debt collection and things of that nature, and you will find that information within the FDCPA, those actions that you can bring against them. But I say this again respectfully, sometime when you don't have that knowledge to do certain things or you're not educated in certain arenas, sometime that was some relief for you. Instead of dealing with a bunch of attorneys, instead of dealing with a very financially stable bank, and dealing with all of the threats of having you displaced from your property, sometimes you make a deal with the devil. Okay, understand this, the courts are very corrupt for the most part. Okay?
Yeah.
And in order for you to win using this mortgage-related laws and languages, you will find 100 cases out there that say that they can do this, and you'll find equally 100 that say that they can. Now, how much confusion is that, that our judiciary can't decide what is law and what is not? Okay, so we're dealing with a lot of opinions, and you're going to deal with a lot of courts who are corporations themselves that will be the gatekeepers for the banking industry, and they will have you lost in the sauce trying to play the mortgage creditor lender thing. But if you stick to who they are, the FDCPA, you diminish the court's ability to rule out of your favor by keeping it right where it need to be on a 1-2 step. You're a debt collector. You're a debt collector. All right, brother? So hopefully that answered your question. You need anything further? You have our email address?
Yeah. All right.
Yes, sir.
I got another brother, partner right here with me, and he wanted to ask you a quick question. He's going to take a hot second.
All right, right quick.
Hold up.
Hey, Bro Sharif, what if the bank offer you a 3-month trial period, and after that they do a modification? But I made two payments, and I didn't make the third, and I didn't sign anything. What would that fall in that area?
Well, again, you executed paperwork with the debt collector, so you validated the debt with them, or at least gave them the impression that you believe that they're a creditor. All right, so that's one thing that you did, and that's why they will offer you. I told you off the rip, the first thing they're going to offer you if you start sending them some letters or correspondence, they're going to offer you a modification right off the rip because they know people will jump on that. They want to seal their identity or keep their mask on and say, we're a creditor. Don't you believe that? We're going to send you this modification. We're going to drop your rate. We're going to have you make 3 temporary payments, okay, or practice payments. And then they're supposed to, by law, they're required to modify it once you make those payments. But as we know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of cases where the banks actually don't do that. They're, all they want to do in that modification is one or two things. They either want you to execute some paperwork with them that will validate their debt and waive those defenses that you may have pursuant to the FDCPA, or they want to get you to sign a new note so they can increase their investment 90, 200, 300% by you executing an actual modification.
I won't be able to use your process because of what I've done?
You can still do it. The answer would be the same to your constituent next to you. You would do the same thing. You would just go ahead. If you didn't make the 3 payments, trust me, they'll give you another shot. I mean, because, again, if they paid on a $100,000 mortgage, if they paid 5 to 10%, they paid $1,000 for your debt, okay? Listen to me. If they paid $1,000 for your $100,000 debt and they gave you a trial modification and say make $3,000 payments and you made 2 of them, you just paid the full cost of what they paid for your debt. So what they're dealing with, as we call it in the corporate world, you're dealing with the gravy now. My cost is already covered. All right? It's all profit from here on. They might give you another shot, but if they don't give you another shot, they're going to use the paperwork that you signed with them applying for a service or requesting credit from them, and they're going to use that and say, we gave you a shot, we're just going to take your property.
Yeah, because they have an attorney coming out to me now.
Attorney is a debt collector. Hopefully that helps, brother. I'm going to go on to another call. All right, I'm going to go down and see if my protege is here. I think he showed up to the call. See if I can find him on the board and see if he has any comments, concerns, or questions. Let's see if I can find him here. If you are, brother, I'm in. Press 1 to make sure you're in the call queue so I can find you and pull you up. All right. Well, I'm going to keep looking. Meanwhile, I'm going to go to another caller. Let's go to Anonymous here. Anonymous, you have no call number showing in the queue. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern? Anonymous, do you have a question, comment, or a concern? Your line is open. All right, let's go to Delaware, 302, ending in 7930. Delaware, your call is now open. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
79, that's my number.
Yes, ma'am, that's your number.
Islam. We're just listening in. I want to give you props. Actually, we weren't intending to call in because we was actually adjusting for the speaker, etc. Because just keep up the good work. But I don't really have any questions.
You are one of the brothers. I've never spoken to you, brother, but you are an icon and a leader in this nation, and I want to give you honors. I bow to you for the extensive work that you've done free-heartedly for your people. You've done a great deal for myself and for many that you've blessed with the information. And it's because of you and others that I intend to bring this information from the legal society to our nation so that it will uplift us economically. And I definitely appreciate your appearance just in listening to the show, and hopefully you will be able to extrapolate some of that information and be able to apply it to the rest of the nation that you have access to. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I don't, brother, much props to you, and I appreciate what you avatars are doing for the nation. Props and honors to you as well, and it's an honor listening to you. Keep
Thank
up the
you,
good
sir.
Work.
Thank
Peace
you, sir.
Love.
Peace and love. All right, we're going to go over to New York. Let's go to New York, ending in 5379. New York, 5379. Your line is open. You are on the air. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question? All right. We're going to go down to Atlanta, 404, ending in 2544. Atlanta, your line is now open. Atlanta, 2544, you are now in the air. Do you have a question, comment, or concern? All right. Let's go down to True American Original. True American Original, your line is now open. You are on the air. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Oh, no, no, bro, not at this time.
Thank you, sir. Yep. All right. Let's go down to Virginia, 704. We're going to do 704-3792. 704-3792, your line is now open. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. You're on the air. What's your question, comment, or concern?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, sir.
Can you? Yeah, please.
You're live on the air.
Listening.
I can hear you.
Yeah, right. I just was listening in, bro.
All right. Have you gotten some good information from the show?
Oh, of course, of course. I don't have any real estate yet, but, I can apply the same with the student loans, et cetera.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
understand when you bring up
you.
Student loans, understand that student loans many times are securitized as well. Okay?
Oh, believe
so,
me, I know. I
that's
know.
Right.
They just started calling me this morning, and I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right. So student loans are securitized,
you know,
and many times those guys are playing Halloween on you too. Okay? They don't
yeah,
own
see,
that particular
I do
promissory note.
I do have one quick question.
Sure.
So now that I got you, is say for instance, you know, like my oldest son's mother had some hardship where she had to go to the services for help, and they just sent me some papers and all where, well, really basically I'm in the process of waiting for my name declaration and judicial notice papers back. And I was wondering if I should wait to file anything when I'm in my proper person or, you know, does it matter?
Okay.
You know, because
yeah,
I hear guys all
the
time
wrong,
say.
Yeah, that's the wrong topic for the wrong show. We're not dealing with puritanical issues on this show. We're dealing with debt. But if you come on tomorrow or any other day, our brother Youssef will gladly provide you with that information. I am not well versed in those areas. The brother Taj, who is on, our leader in this nation, will have that type of information, or brother Youssef will
have
it.
I know.
All right, brother. So I appreciate the question, but I'm not going to try to step into that because we're going to stay on top here. So I appreciate you. I'm going to the next caller. All right. All right, let's go to Delaware, 301, ending in 6750. Delaware, 6750. Your line is now open. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern? Delaware, 6750. You're on the air. All right, let's move on. See if I can find some New York in the house here. Let's go to Jersey, 202-5140, Jersey, 202-5140. Your line is now open. You're on a high-frequency radio. What's your question, comment, or concern?
Hello.
Jersey, 5140, your line is open. Do you have a question?
Okay.
All right. Let's go up here to, let's go back to Georgia and see what. know why people wasn't answering. Let's go to 704-2642. 704-2642. Your line is now open. You're on a high frequency radio. Do you have a question? All right. Let's go to 240-3273. 240-3273. You're on a high frequency radio. Do you have a question?
Yeah, hey, peace, bro. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All right. Hey, listen, I got in a little financial difficulty. I had an injury and had credit cards, went to judgment. Land went foreclosure, county foreclosure. I know that's a federal issue dealing with mortgages, but is there a website that I missed or anything like that, somebody that can assist me? I'm just tuning into the show about 5 minutes ago. But with the credit card situation, they went in and got some money out the bank. And with the mortgage, I had a judge's chicken scratch, but no name of the judge. I know there's a, from what I understand, I know there's, I think it's a Title 17 and banking issue or some violation or something. I'm not too sure at the moment. Was there anything I can do to sue them in their personal capacity, something like that?
All right, your question is kind of loaded, brother. So you said you lost your job. You're dealing with a credit card debt?
Well, yeah, I had an injury and foreclosure. I lost. Well, I didn't lose my land. I got to pay the taxes on it, you know. But okay. It has gone to judgment, and the judge that allegedly signed the foreclosure in the county put chicken scratch on the contract or the order, but I don't know who the judge was because the judge didn't print out the name.
So okay,
I'm sure that's some sort of violation of whatever, some sort of violation.
Sure, probably many violations. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Okay, I want you to listen to my question because, again, I'm going to teach you guys how to ask and answer questions effectively, not with emotions, okay, not with subject matter, but identify, qualify, and frame the question and your answer. Do you owe the debt collector that sued you money?
No.
Okay. So you know that you didn't owe him money or them money.
They're a third
right?
party. They're a third party.
They're a third party. They never loaned you any money, did they?
Not at all. There's no real money.
They never gave you any services. So let me ask you a question. Yeah. Are you familiar with the term hearsay?
That's what the third party's testimony would be.
Okay, let's go to the street with the definition. Let's do what hearsay is. I'm going to give you the legal definition, and then I'm going to give you the street version.
Right.
Hearsay on the street version is going to be gossip, rumors, okay, talk,
right.
Street talk, word around the street, all of those affectionate terms describes hearsay, okay?
Right.
That's what hearsay is, okay, from a basic fundamental definition. Let's get into what hearsay means legally. And where we find that information would be in the Federal Rules of Evidence. I want y'all to write that down, the Federal Rules of Evidence, F-R-E. All right? You can Google that and find that information. Hearsay and evidence is going to be important elements existing in any type of debt or debt collection action. All right? Within the Federal Rules of Evidence, you will find the definitions in 801, okay? And you will find what hearsay means, okay, in 801, and you will find in 802 the rule against hearsay, all right? Listen to the legal definition of hearsay. Hearsay means a statement that the declarant, okay? So in order for you to have a declarant, you have to have somebody that proffers a declaration, correct? Okay, it didn't say a debt collector. It didn't say an attorney. It said hearsay means a statement that the declarant, in order for you to declare something, meaning you declaring your nationality or you declaring your appellation, you have to provide some sort of a declaration. So that means a declarant does not make okay, hearsay is a statement that a declarant does not make while testifying at the current trial or hearing. Okay? So hearsay is a statement that the declarant does not make while testifying at the current trial or hearing. In other words, you was presented with a lawsuit from a debt collector. They drafted a summons and a complaint, and they sued you in some sort of a venue, probably a small claims court venue. Okay? The attorneys drafted a complaint against you, which is a short statement of facts. Okay? That's what a complaint's supposed to be. A short statement of facts. But in fact, there wasn't any facts at all. Because in order for you to have fact, you have to be a competent fact witness. Okay? Meaning that you have to be a person privy to the information, witness information, or witness a particular transaction occur, be executed, or consummated. All right? So we all know that if that attorney drew up a complaint and said that on this particular day you got a credit card, you didn't pay it, and you owe $10,000, is that a fact? Or is that hearsay?
That would be hearsay.
Why would it be hearsay?
Well, because they never were a witness to that actual
thank you.
Transaction.
Exactly. That's the answer. Short and sweet. That's the answers I want. So he's not a witness. So what kind of personal firsthand knowledge does that attorney have about any alleged debt or what you paid or what you didn't pay? Okay? He doesn't have any firsthand knowledge. So what you should have been your posture in the court. The first thing you say, although you may have some information, but you don't know that what they're saying is actually true. You don't know if you owe $10,000 or $2,000, okay? And how can you take that information from a third-party debt collector who received the information from a third or fourth-party debt collector that information is accurate enough for them to go in court and obtain a judgment against you? How would you allow that to happen?
So, okay? If I
was on the show, all right, and word around the street was, Brother Youssef knocked me out on 125th Street next to the Apollo. Word got around the hood. Did y'all hear Youssef knock Brother Sharif out? Nah, I didn't hear that, man. But then later on, you get around the block, and some of the people say, oh, man, that didn't happen, man. Youssef ain't knock him out. The Brother Sharif tripped. Youssef swung at him. He ducked. He tripped, and he didn't knock him out, right? That's hearsay. Right. Although we believe it sometimes, that's called gossip. That's hearsay. But what would be a fact? Hey, man, you would be a witness. I seen Brother Youssef knock Brother Sharif out on 125th at the Apollo. I mean, he knocked him cold. I caught him with a right uppercut, a Mayweather flurry. Dude was out. Sharif was out. You're a competent fact witness. Okay, and if I was to press charges, you would be a witness that would be called or subpoena to come and say, did you see Brother Youssef knock Brother Sharif out in front of the Apollo? Yep. Well, what time was it? It was around Tuesday, about 3:30. I was coming out of Karate Flick. We was coming out of Apollo. We was dapped up, eight-piece suit, feather hat, spurs, and everything, gaiters on. Brother Sharif came out clean. Brother Youssef didn't like what he had on, and the women was all on him, so Brother Youssef knocked him out. That's fact, okay, because you can testify to that. So let me ask you a question. When that attorney filed a complaint against you and came up in court and stated all this stuff in the complaint, did he have facts or did he have hearsay? He had hearsay. And hearsay is not allowed in court, okay? Let's go over what is not hearsay, okay? Pursuant to the federal rules of evidence, hearsay, statements that are not hearsay, is the following. A declarant witnesses prior statement, okay? A declarant testifies, and they are subject to cross-examination about a statement, okay? You heard what I just said? So that's what's not hearsay. If somebody puts a declaration in, they say, listen, brother, you loan that money. I watch you execute that agreement. I was the one that took in payments on your account. I was the one that closed your account. I was the only person that accepted or who managed that account. Then, you know, I'm going to provide a declaration and be like, I know for sure that brother got that credit card. He made those charges, and he didn't pay. Many times, 9 times out of 10, you are not going to have that type of declarant or witness in any debt collection case. Mainly what the attorneys are going to say to you is you got a mortgage back in 2005, but they're suing you in 2010. So ask me this question. How does a lawyer know what the hell you did in 2005 if he just came on the scene in 2010? How can that robo-signer execute an assignment saying that you had a mortgage in 2005 when they were just assigned the mortgage in 2010? You understand? They don't have any firsthand knowledge. They don't know anything. You know what they depend on? You being uninformed and uneducated and sending the debt collector a QWR and telling them, look, I lost my job. Can you help me out? Can you send me a modification? You tell on ourselves. We do it in criminal cases. We do it in civil cases. They wait for us to tell on ourselves. So does a debt collector call? Hello, this is Ocwen Service Financing, and we're calling about your mortgage payment. Yeah, no, no, no. What happened was I'm going to send y'all a payment. You know, my check was late. And, you know, we automatically go into subject matter. Instead of identifying and denying, I don't know what you're talking about. What mortgage? You got a mortgage in 2005. When? I don't recall that. I need proof that what mortgage? Well, we found it in the county recorder. Well, you know, we all know the county recorders and that just about every state in the United States is basically just a crime scene for mortgage fraud. We all know that. They're not reliable. Okay? Not reliable. So where are you getting that information from? Oh, the county recorder. Yeah, that's hearsay, brother. That has to be authenticated. Okay? You have to be the one to be a competent fact witness to a transaction that occurred if you want to style it a mortgage or deed or security deed. Other than that, the only person in this particular case that has any facts is me. So basically, Mr. Attorney, what facts are you able to provide to the court today? What would that answer be?
Hey, am I still here?
You're still here.
Okay. Would I be correct in saying that that lawyer for the bank has no
standing, no capacity. He has no first-hand knowledge. He has no facts.
But
he's waiting for you to give him the facts. Listen to me. Listen to me.
Okay.
He's waiting for you to give him the facts.
Okay.
He's waiting for you to admit the hearsay or not object to it. He's going to make statements in court saying that you owe a debt. And if you don't object to it, then you agree that you owe a debt. The only tool an attorney has, listen to me closely, and I'm going to go to the next call. The only tool that an attorney has is what? His mouth, his writing. That's it. They can put together a good story. Okay? That's why the banks go to them. Put together this. Listen, we don't have an assignment. Look, you know, that debt was charged off. It was securitized. It was, we don't know what the hell they owe. Put together something nice and sweet. Okay? They're creators. They're scientists. They're scientists. They're what we're supposed to be, scientists. We're supposed to go in a lab. They go in a lab and they create something. They piece together something and they present it to the court. And the only thing you need to say is that, I don't know what that attorney is right. I don't understand what he's talking about. That's a bunch of hearsay. I'm going to ask you one question, Mr. Attorney. Were you there in 2005? You wasn't there in 2005? Okay, so basically the only thing you can provide to this court is hearsay, right? Do you have any evidence, admissible evidence, pursuant to the rules of evidence that will support any of the allegations or statements that is written herein in this complaint? Well, I have Susie, the robo-signer, from the debt collector's office that's a vice president of, let's say, MERS. Or let's say a vice president of the Loss Litigation Department. Nice titles that they have. Okay? Again, that's Halloween. They're debt collectors. Okay? So Susie's going to show up, the robo-signer, and she's going to tell you why she executed that assignment or why she sent you that bill and how it is, what it is. And you're going to ask Susie, where did you get that information from? Well, I got it from the original creditor, Bank Washington Mutual. Susie, do you work for Washington Mutual? No. Have you ever worked for Washington Mutual? No. Are you sitting in this court under penalty of perjury, and would you swear under your full liability that the information you received from the now defunct and dissolved Washington Mutual is accurate. Are you willing to swear before this court that that information is accurate? And are you willing to sign or be sworn in and testify to the validity or veracity of that alleged debt? What personal firsthand knowledge do you have other than you obtaining that information from somebody else that is not here to support what you're saying? You're a debt collector. Of course you're going to say that it's a legitimate debt. You follow where I'm going, brother?
Sure.
Nobody has the facts but you. And always remember that. Nobody has the fact but you.
So I'm align myself with the Fifth Amendment and not be a witness against myself.
You're not going to be a witness against yourself. You should go on direct offense and start beating the stew beef out of those that's just providing hearsay. That's it. Take the stand, be sworn in, and say, I've never received a debt. I've never obtained any services. I've never executed a contract with this debt collector. I don't know who they are. I don't have any evidence of a transaction or a mortgage that ever occurred. I don't have any evidence pursuant to the rules of evidence, admissible evidence, that a loan was ever received, that a check was ever cashed, that the original creditor ever funded this loan. You see what I mean? I could go on and on. I mean, I don't have any admissible evidence. You just can't come in, make statements, and say that somehow – results in you having facts.
I guess what I meant was my shield would be my Fifth Amendment, and then I'm going forward with what you just said as artillery.
Forget the Fifth Amendment. Go on the attack.
Okay.
Right.
Hey, did I miss the email or website? Again, I only been in my
sure.
Head.
You'll have it at the end of the show. Keep listening in. Thank you for your call, brother. I'm gonna go to the next caller. All right, we're gonna go to 267-3782. 267-3782. Your line is now open. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a call, comment, or concern?
Yes.
Question,
yes,
comment,
hi,
or concern.
Can
How
you
are
me?
You? Yes,
I'm
go
great,
ahead. I
I'm
can.
Great. Yes, thank you. Yes, my. I apologize. I just got on the phone in the last 10 minutes, but I knew you were going to be on. However, I received a claim or settlement notice stating that they are suing J.P. Morgan Chase, and that for people who had forced insurance. Now, my question is, should I even bother to send a reply when I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about? That's
well, it
question.
Sounds like you got – sounds like you're – being requested to be a plaintiff probably in a class action that some attorneys decided to take against J.P.
Right,
Morgan
right,
Chase.
Right.
It's not a bad thing. Class action lawsuits are really designed really to enrich the law firm that's bringing the action. You will get something
right,
out of it, but you'll be the
right,
you'll get pennies, you know.
I'm not interested in it at all, okay, because really they're trying to solicit, I'm looking at, they're trying to solicit information, and I thought I had read somewhere where they were talking about I could not opt out. And I'm like, well,
if you don't respond. Right, if you don't respond, they will include you. A lot of times, understand, we're dealing with a legal society, so they have ways of tricking you into acquiescing or not objecting to what they're doing. So they'll send you out those letters, and most of the time they'll say, we're going to include you in this lawsuit in the class action unless you send us a letter and tell us not to. Okay, other than that, they're not going to ask you to go ahead and send us permission. They're going to assume the position. Okay, they're going to make assumptions, like as always preached on this show. They're going to make assumption that you're down with it unless you write them and say, no, I'm not down. Don't put me in there. Okay, but let me talk about insurance as well. Forced place insurance, I'm glad you brought that up. You have many, I've explained to you how debt collectors and how much they pay for these debts. I was involved in a case where we sued a particular bank, and I won't name the name of the bank, but what we found and discovered was another avenue that they make a whole lot of money. Okay, I've already explained to you we're not dealing with mortgagees and creditors and lenders. So these debt collectors will assume that position, servicer, creditor, and they go and they get this forced place insurance, all right? And understand that when you're dealing with big debt collection agencies and lenders and creditors, you know, they will often get bulk rates on insurance, okay? So the insurance is going to indemnify them against any losses. If your house burns down or falls down or, you know, weather-related losses, they're going to collect. Now imagine this. I told you on a $100,000 loan, they may pay, you know, $5,000, $10,000, okay, on a $100,000 loan. All right? So now they're going to go and get force-placed insurance, follow me, as a debt collector and indemnify themselves to the tune of $100,000 in the event something happens to your home. So if your house happens to burn down, they've already got $100,000 on their investment, meaning that they made 99 times more by acting as a creditor, okay, acting as a mortgagee when they are neither. So we were able to blow the lid off of that scam that they do, and also not only that, the cost that they may be able to purchase that insurance for $500, but they'll charge you $1,500 for forced place insurance, deeming it to be higher because, you know, they had to purchase it. So that's another scam that you need to look out for. But yes, sister, just handle that letter and say you don't want to be a part of that class action lawsuit, or you just might want to be a part of it. And maybe if something come out of it, you may get a penny or two. You may get a happy meal out of it. You know, it's not going to hurt. But, you know, you're going to have a lot of those class action lawsuits go around, and they need parties because that increases the amount of settlement that the attorney law firm who's going to get paid first will get, and then you'll divide up the crackers after that. So hopefully that answers your call. I'm going to move on to the next caller. We're going to go on to New York, 646. New York, 646-5337. Your line is now open. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Hey, it's just a quick comment. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you? Yes, sir.
I'm good. This is Brother Al from New York.
All right, Al.
I just wanted to chime in, and I know that you were speaking about the loan modifications earlier.
Uh-huh.
And I know a quick remedy for it. It's not quick, but under Title 18, Section 1341, under frauds and swindles, there's a remedy for that.
Okay.
I don't know if
I appreciate you stating that. Sure. And let me explain why you. Okay, read it out for us real quick.
All right. It says, whoever having devised or intended to devise any scheme or artifice to defraud or for obtaining money or property by means of false or fraudulent pretenses, representations or promises, or to sell, dispose of, loan, exchange, alter, give away, distribute, supply, or furnish, or procure for unlawful use any counterfeit or spurious coin, obligation, security, or other article or anything represented to be or intimidated or held out to be such counterfeit or spurious article for the purpose of executing such scheme or artifice or attempting so to do, places in any post office or authorized depository for mail matter, any matter or thing whatever to be sent or delivered by the postal service or deposits or causes to be deposited, any matter or thing whatever to be sent or delivered by any private or commercial interstate carrier or takes or receives therefrom, any such matter or thing or knowingly causes to be delivered by mail or such carrier according to the direction thereon or at the place at which it is directed to be delivered by the person to whom it is addressed, any such matter or thing shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. If the violation occurs in relation to or involving any benefits authorized, transported, transmitted, transferred, dispersed, or paid in connection with the presidentially declared major disaster or emergency as those terms are defined in Section 102 of Robert T. Stafford Disaster Relief Fund Emergency Assistance Act 42 U.S.C. 5122, or affects financial institutions, such persons shall be fined not more than $1 million or imprisoned for no more than 30 years or both.
Okay. Brother, I appreciate you supplying that information, and that's good information to have, But what you have to understand is when you're looking at Title 18 and other federal law, many times we don't have the ability, okay, or there, what it's called legally is we don't have a private right of action to bring those type of claims against a bank or banking corporation. Usually those claims are reserved for the attorney general, prosecutors and things of that nature is within the state. So, you know, there are certain Title 18, 242, 243, 241. Those are issues that you can litigate in the district court, but many of the other ones regarding banking crimes, you don't have a private right of action to bring those claims. But I appreciate you providing us with that source, and it's good to know. But most of us on this call is probably not ready to engage in those type of actions. So I appreciate you calling. I'm going to speak about New York for a minute with as it relates in regards to foreclosures, because New York has a pretty interesting system when it comes to foreclosures. In fact, I'm going to go and call it out for what it is. It's a bunch of nonsense when you go through a judicial foreclosure in New York. In New York, you get it is a judicial state. New York, as you understand, is the capital really of Wall Street, and most of the securitization trusts are organized in the state of New York. Most of them are recorded in Delaware, but they are governed under New York trust law. So you will hear a lot of cases come out of New York. Bank of New York Mellon has their principal place of business there. Some of the other banks do as well. Many of these securitization trusts and many of these banks enjoy some of the tax benefits and corporate benefits to Delaware. And most of them you'll find organized and existing under the laws of Delaware. But in New York, you will find is where your trust and your trust law applies. But New York, when you go through a foreclosure, is interesting because you file a summons and complaint, and then automatically they will put you through what you call a foreclosure part. It's a RJI, request for judicial intervention. And what that allows is for the debt collector posing as a creditor or mortgagee, and I've handled plenty of cases up there. What happens is they send you through this foreclosure part, and it's an opportunity for you to come and meet with the debt collector posing as a creditor and work out some sort of a payment plan, modification, or something of that sort, okay? And let me tell you why that's a bunch of nonsense, okay? First of all, how can a – and they call them Supreme Courts in New York. They're not Supreme Courts in the meaning of how we understand it to be, but state courts are considered Supreme Courts in New York. So how is it that a debt collector posing as a mortgagee or lender will file a case and you immediately – go into some sort of a diversion program that will allow you to bring in, and I'm telling you, these Supreme Courts, there are people in those lines around the courtroom going to these, to this RJI, which is called a foreclosure part, and they're lining up like you would on a cheese line, like you're in a cafeteria in high school. And people are standing out there with pay stubs, Social Security check stubs, utility bills, proof of residency, proof of income, begging the debt collectors to work something out. I think it's embarrassing for any of us to show up thinking our house is under confiscation when if you mount a pretty meaningful defense, you or identify who you're dealing with, you would understand that you shouldn't be talking with them at all. Now, they make the program sound almost mandatory, and those judges there will make you sound like an idiot if you didn't take that opportunity to participate in this particular diversion program so you can work out something, and the court is assuming that you're dealing with creditors, okay? I have no doubt in my mind that the court is getting some compensation from every participant, okay, in those particular programs, okay, because, again, we're turning something from nothing into another debt, a debt that's already been extinguished, already been paid by credit default swap insurance and all other assurances that are applicable to mortgages, and they're taking that opportunity to create a whole new debt. Again, I told you, buying some debt for some pennies and selling it for some thousands, okay? So they have you come in there and do a modification, and that way you don't have to litigate. For those of you who are not educated in litigation or is not using correctly your consumer protection laws, you might fall prey to that. Or you might tell the court, absolutely not. I don't even know who these people are. To me, they appear to be debt collectors, although you have come to some legal conclusion that they're somehow creditors or mortgagees, and I don't understand how the court comes to that conclusion, and you haven't litigated yet. So how are you going to send somebody into a program to work out a modification or a settlement with somebody they haven't even been identified? Where does the civil rules of procedure, okay, or the New York rules of procedure come into play where we have the opportunity to identify standing and capacity and identify the identity of the parties? But we don't have that if we go into this diversion program, okay, because I'm already working out a deal with a debt collector, and I'm sitting up there in the line waiting all day to see if they'll let me keep my house. It's just ridiculous. It's an embarrassment. And those of you in New York, do your research and go into court, because if you're in a judicial foreclosure state, you should never lose your home. I'm telling you right now, I just explained to you how you should never lose your home. You're dealing with debt collectors that don't have any personal firsthand knowledge, and they're not witnesses to any consumer transaction. Notice I said consumer transaction, not mortgage, not deed of trust. I don't use that language with debt collectors. What do you mean mortgage? What are you talking about? How can you talk about a mortgage and you're not a mortgagee? You're a debt collector. It's a consumer transaction. I may or may not have done a consumer transaction in 2005 at Wells Fargo. Okay, I may or may not have executed a note in a mortgage. I don't have any evidence that I did. You're telling me that I did. Where's your evidence? Okay, pursuant to the Federal Rules of Evidence, where is your evidence? You don't have any. So basically, you're relying upon hearsay, correct? And that's not allowed in court. Let's move on. Let's go over to California for those of you Californians that's dealing with foreclosure, and I'm going to wrap this up. We have about 20 minutes left, all right? Let's talk about California. California is a non-judicial state. I want all of you in California to pull up a document affectionately called a notice of trustee sale. If you are dealing with a foreclosure in California, Recon Trust, California Reconveyance, those kind of entities that are posing, masquerading themselves, using the Halloween theory, they're acting as creditors and lenders and mortgagees. Well, you have a document that you will receive called a notice of trustee sale. You also receive several other notices pursuant to your deed of trust if you get proper notice, and we'll discuss that on the next show. We'll go into dissecting a mortgage in case some of you may have a legitimate mortgagee or creditor or lender before you, then there is a lot of things you can rely on regarding TILA and RESPA and some of the other Dodd-Frank Act and some of the other things to make sure they're complying with the terms of the mortgage and the deed of trust. Okay, you will find many times dealing with these debt collectors, they're very, 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 how can I put it? They're not as savvy, and they don't have the programming, and they don't have the features, and they don't have the software to really wear that mask of a creditor very well. You will notice the difference if you pull up one of your mortgage statements. You will see what type of program, which are multi-million-dollar programs, they have to print out those statements. Those statements are very detailed. They have your payments. They have your escrow. They have your interest rate. They have your principal balance. They have all that type of stuff. They'll have everything in that. But when you notice that they get sold off to these debt collectors, you see some letters that look like a 12-year-old wrote it. And you're going to pay them $100,000, or you're going to pay them $5,000 if they write you a letter like that. So you should be able to tell from the communication itself that you're dealing with some piddly debt collectors that don't have enough money to really get a good system, okay, a computer system to be able to print you out some legitimate statements. All right, some of y'all pay on these statements that I see. I mean, like, I don't even know how you would pay somebody $5 if they sent you a letter that looks like that. All right, again, using that theory. Some people know you got fake Gucci bags and you got real Gucci bags. I don't know how some of you ever bought the fake Gucci bag thinking it was a real Gucci bag, because people with real Gucci bags will be able to tell, no, that's a fake Gucci bag. So you should be able to tell a fake creditor by their letters. But let's look at the notice of trustee sale. If you look at the notice of trustee sale, it will describe, it'll say you are in default on the deed of trust, and unless you take action to protect your property, it'll be sold at a public sale. If you need an explanation of the nature of the proceedings against you, you should contact a lawyer. Of course, they want you to go to the lawyer, because the lawyer is going to, you know, help them gain possession of your property, or he might just defer the results of that. But he's definitely, most of them, I will say, is not going to be successful in you maintaining your property. Some of them really honestly will. And I'm not going to place a blanket failure on the society as a whole, but most of them won't. Okay? Understand, bank and bar are synonymous terms. But let's go down to the bottom of this notice of default. It'll allege that your property is about to be sold. It'll tell you the place of sale by the fountain located at 400 Civic Center Plaza in Pomona, California. It'll give you the legal description of the property, and it'll tell you, you know, you're about to go through a foreclosure. You are about to lose your house. We're about to sell your property on the court steps or by the fountain, at least, for lack of a better word, by the fountain at the courthouse. All right, but let's go to the bottom of that letter. And if you look on the bottom of the letter, for all of you that buy foreclosed property, or for all of you that's went through a foreclosure and then the owner shows up, you know, with some farmers on and some big boots and a cowboy hat talking about, I just bought that property, I need you to get up on out of here in about 3 to 5 days. All right, I want you to look at the headache. If you're going to educate yourself, and this show is going to help you do that, I want you to look at what they bought, okay? Once you look at what they bought, on the bottom of the notice, of a notice of default, for those of you in California, you will see a section in the disclaimer that says notice to potential bidders. These are for the people that are going to the sale buying your property from an alleged foreclosure. And I want you to pay close attention to what I'm reading you so you can see the shenanigans and the outright nonsense, and it should be it should act as a blight upon you for not reading your documentation. It should be a bump upside your head for you not understanding what they're sending you. That's our failure not to read and understand. But this is what it says. And if you on the internet, you can Google a notice of trustee sale California, and you can read along with me and see what everybody in California is being privy to. It says, notice of potential bidders. If you are considering bidding on this property lien, you should property lien. Notice what I said, not property, property lien. If you are considering bidding on this property lien, you should understand that there are risks involved in bidding at a trustee auction. You will be bidding on a lien. I'm going to say that one more time. You will be bidding on a lien. Now listen to this part, not on the property itself. No, I didn't make that up. Pull one up, read it for yourself. Those of you in California, read it for yourself. It says you will be bidding on a lien, not on the property itself. So how the hell are you having a foreclosure of your property, which is said in the body of the letter, up top on the first page, it says your property is getting sold and foreclosed on. But then to the bidders that are showing up there with their money, the fools that go there and give the bank some money, it tells them, under no uncertain terms, you are bidding on a lien, not on the property itself. Placing the highest bid at the trustee auction does not automatically entitle you to free, yes, they use the words, free and clear ownership of the property. You should also be aware that the lien being auctioned off, not the property, it says the lien, being auctioned off may be a junior lien. That means you might not be a Big Mac. You may be a junior Big Mac. You might not be in first place. You might be in fifth place. Okay? That's what it says. I didn't make it up. Read it. If you are the highest bidder at the auction, you are or may be responsible for paying off all liens senior to the lien being auctioned off before you can receive clear title to the property. I don't know how many warnings, okay, that you must have if you're a bidder or I don't know how many warnings or contradicting statements or conflicting statements can exist in one particular letter in communication for you all in California to not be going completely ape on these debt collectors, all right? So that's what it says in the notice to the potential bidders. And, yes, they attached the page when they sent it to you, and you didn't read it, and you think you're having a foreclosure, and they're selling what they perceive as a lien, okay? What they're saying is a lien, and they're saying, you know, you're buying, you know, you open up door number one, it may be a box of gold or a box of chocolates. It's up to you, man. It's your risk. You know, and even if you get that box of chocolate, you might owe some people a couple of pieces out of that box, or you might have to buy the whole box really to get your money back. All right, so I want you all to, in California, to be aware of that. I want you to understand who you're dealing with, who the debt collectors are. We have 12 minutes left. I'm not going to take another call. I'm going to wrap up today. Next week, we will start again on Tuesday, same bat time, same bat channel. We're going to go over the FDCPA a little bit more. We're going to transition into the FCRA, and we're going to talk more about these debt collectors. I hope everybody on the call got something out of the call. Again, you can reach us here at High Frequency Radio on the email address posted on the site. If you have a need for additional services and consultations, you can reach our group at thelawmaster44@yahoo.com, thelawmaster44@yahoo.com. Understand, as I preface in the beginning of the show, everything on this call is free every Tuesday, every day, whether it's myself, Brother Youssef, or any of the other hosts. We freely give this information to you throughout these 3 hours. However, after this show ends, we become parents, fathers, relatives, businessmen, businesswomen. We do not continue consultation in a free demeanor after the show. If you need further information, I've given you a bunch for you to be able to go to that information, read it, and understand it for yourself. If you want to draft a letter and you need a sample, I will post a sample of how the format of a letter should be. But if you're telling me on this call that you've never written a letter, and it's just simply, listen, I got this correspondence from you, and where you're deeming yourself to be a mortgagee or a creditor, I'm not in possession of any information supporting that allegation or statement. So I need you to provide for me, pursuant to 15 U.S.C. 1692G, I need you to validate and or verify your alleged debt. Simple. Okay? That's it. So if y'all looking for a bunch of case law and a bunch of here, to, and forth, with, and thereby, and herein, you don't need all of that. Nah, that's nonsense. That's for the attorneys. They get billable hours. They get paid to sound fancy. Okay, we don't have to be fancy. We deal with the facts. We're consumers. I have the facts. You don't. Tell me what you got. You don't have anything, then you need to not send me any more of these letters. And because you did send me that letter, that Halloween letter, and where you had a mask on as a creditor, but really you're a debt collector, I'm going to have to sue you, okay? And I'll have to bring an action in the district court or the small claims court under federal and state law, and I'm going to have to sue you for your deceptive practice. Okay, because under the FDCPA, you cannot send letters or make a threat to take an action that you legally cannot take. You cannot send me documents that has some legal format that's not really legal. Okay, you read the FDCPA, and I am basically asking all of you on this call that when you show up next week that you have read the FDCPA. It is not long, and let me explain this to you. The FDCPA was written by Congress for the average Joe Blow. So in other words, getting into street language, it was written for Pookie, Uncle Bubba, Aunt Mammy and all of them to understand. What does that mean, Brother Sharif? That means that when they're sending you communications, those attorneys shouldn't be sending you all this here to buy with and therein and here and after and efferment and all that kind of fancy legalese stuff. When you're dealing with debt collectors and debt pursuant to the FDCPA, if the terminology that they use is it has to be understandable by the least sophisticated consumer. Who's the least sophisticated consumer? Uncle Bubba that didn't graduate from high school, that don't understand all that fancy language. You gotta water it down and say, Uncle Bubba, we're your debt collector. We bought your debt, or you owe us a debt. And Uncle Bubba has to be able to understand that letter so he can be able to respond and or answer to the correspondence properly. Okay? So, in essence, you can bring a claim saying, they sent me this difficult letter about all this stuff. I don't even understand that. Under the FDCPA, you need to water it down a little bit and tell me exactly what the hell you're saying and what you mean. So understand that the FDCPA is not complicated law. You need to read it. It's about 8 to 10 pages, the body of the laws. Very simple to read, very simple to understand. As well as your state consumer protection laws is going to be just as simplistic. So when I'm telling you to read and to study is not heavy case law marinated in legalese terminology to where you need a translation. Understand that sometimes we provide translation of certain, of many things lawful, okay? And sometimes we do have a literacy issue that we don't understand certain things, or we have to read things a number of times before we can gain a full understanding of it. But nonetheless, you still got to go and you got to read it, and you got to study it. It's very easy. It is going to help you obtain and maintain thousands of dollars in real property, thousands of dollars out of your bank account, okay? It's going to prevent you from garnishments. It's going to prevent you from being enslaved, okay, in economic slavery if you study these laws that I'm mentioning to you, okay? This is not a show, again. This is not a show about things that will not bring you financial energy. My show is designed to bring you financial energy and relief for you to be able to build a nation, for you to be able to contribute to building, for you to be able to help your kids, for us to be able to build schools so we can educate our own children, for us to be able to have capital, for us to be able to have power monetarily. This is what this show is designed to do. And hopefully it's going to do just that. I thank everybody for joining us today. This is going to conclude our call. We see you next week, next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Again, I'm thankful to Brother Youssef for bringing me onto the High Frequency Radio family. I will be here as long as he allows me to. Hopefully combined, we intend to build a powerful network and bring you in sorts a Morris Walmart to where you can learn a variety of things. You can learn about law, you can learn about status, you can learn about ethnicity, you can learn about religion. We intend to bring you that total Walmart experience to where you'll have 5 days during a week, maybe even 7, where we can touch on different topics that are important to our society. Again, thank you, honor to everybody who joined us today. Hopefully it was a blessing. We'll see you next week. God bless.
Baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy no more, but you'll always be my baby. It seems like only yesterday I was holding you in my arms. Now look at you now, big man. But I worry about you. I worry about you all the time. Hanging out on the corner all times of night with the cool people. Baby, that ain't nothing but trouble. I always taught you that you could have whatever you dream. Well, I want you to hold on to that dream, baby. Hold on to it real tight. Cause the sky's the limit.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right.
I'd like to welcome
all
to the
right.
stage the lyrically acclaimed.
Woo!
I like this young man because when he came out with the phrase, He went from ashy to classy.
All right.
I like that.
All right.
So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for the Notorious B.I.G. The Notorious B.I.G., ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. A nigga never been as broke as me. I like that. When I was young, I had to pay a lease. Besides that, the pinstripes in the gray. The one I wore on Mondays and Wednesdays. While niggas flirt, I'm throwing tigers on my shirt and alligators. You wanna see the inside? I see you later. Here come the drama. Oh, that's that nigga with the fake.
Wow.
Why you punch me in my face? Stay in your place. Play your position. Here come my intuition. Go in this nigga pocket. Rob him while his friends watching. And hoes clocking. Here comes respect. His crew's your crew, or they might be next. Look at they man eyes, big man, they never try. So we roll with them, stole with them. I mean loyalty, niggas bought me milks at lunch. The milks with chocolate, the cookies, butter crunch. 88, Oshkosh, and blue and white stuff, that's blunt.
I know that you keep on, just keep on
across. They depicted me the boss. Of course, my orange box cut make the world go round. Plus I'm fucking bitches ain't my homegirls now. Thug stacking, dabbled in crack, gun packing. Nicknamed Medina, made the scene took my Nina. From gym class to in glass, passed off for global. The only nigga with a mobile. Can't you see like total? Getting larger and wasted taste. Ain't no telling where this felon is headed. Just in case, keep a shell at the tip of your melon. Clear the space. Your brain was a terrible thing to waste. 88 on gate, snatch initial nameplate. Smoking splits with niggas. Real life, begin to kill us. Praying God forgive us for being sinners. Help us out. Master Enterprise and I ain't have to be in school by 10. I then began to encounter with my counterparts on how to burn the block apart. Break it down into sections. Drugs by these selections. Some use pipes, others use injections. Syringe sold separately. Frank the deputy, quick to grab my Smith and Wesson like my dick was missing. To protect my position, my corner, my layer. While we out here, say the hustler's prayer. If the game shakes me or breaks me, I hope it makes me a better man. Take a better stand, put money in my mom's hand. Get my daughter this college plan, so she don't need no man. Stay far from timid, only make moves when your heart's in it. And live to pray, sky's the limit. Motherfucker.